Blog Talk Radio.
Spirit of Truth Ministry now presents The Bible on Trial, a show that tests the teachings of Christianity against the words and the teachings that Jesus Christ gave to his own eyewitness disciples while he was here on earth. Join us for a challenging and unique study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven.
Hello, welcome everyone. My name is Dennis, and I am here with Dr. Don and Rick, and we're just about ready to have another edition of the Bible on Trial. We're delighted that you've taken a few minutes out of your busy schedule to join us. And we hope that today's study will be a blessing to you and to all of us as we search for the truth. Today is March 1, 2019, and my didn't February go fast. Yeah. And if you have any friends who were born on February 29, tell them happy birthday anyway. Thank you for joining us. I have posted up on our chat room the pertinent information that you need, just especially our website at spiritoftruthministry.net. There you will find our book, The Spirit of the Church, by Rick Sterling and me, Dennis Neufeld. You will also find a lot of writing by Rick, including The Grand Plan, which is a wonderful, wonderful treatise, actually, book length on how salvation really works as opposed to what Christians have been taught. Let's have prayer and we will get started. Father in heaven, Jesus Christ, Holy Spirit, thank you for joining us today and making it possible for us to understand the things that you need us to understand to be of service to the kingdom of heaven on this earth and help bring about the coming of the King. I pray now that you will open our minds, open our hearts to the truth, and help us to be discerning creatures so that what we hear will not only go to our ears, but will go into our intellect. I pray this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Good morning, Don.
Good morning.
And good morning, Rick. It's a delight to see you all here. One of the happy things is that I finally got my stove going again after having started to bake a plastic cutting board. That was a mess. But I finally got it cleaned out. We had biscuits this morning, and oh boy, that's fun.
Do we have any visitors today?
We do. And I actually, it's a 509.
Is that Spokane?
So it's up north somewhere, and it's one of the regulars. I'm not exactly sure who. It could be Don and Linda. Probably it's Don and Linda. So, welcome.
Yes, and thank you, Don and Linda. And for your continued support. Greatly appreciated. The statement that Job makes at the end of his period of trial and I talked about what God did to the gods, small g, of Egypt, and he put them on trial when he judged them. And he proved that they were not God. None of them were gods. They were exposed for the frauds that they are. those same gods are pretending to be gods
today.
Yes.
And we are seeing the outward demonstration of the belief that they are in fact the gods of, or the God of the universe, by how people are behaving in the world today, especially in our political system.
And whether or not you believe in the existence of Satan, if you believe that there is a God, then you must believe in Satan. Now, to believe in Satan doesn't mean you worship Satan or follow Satan necessarily. It just means that you know that Satan is a live, active, spiritual being here on this earth, as much as God is a live, acting, spiritual being in the heavens with a presence on this earth in the form of the Holy Spirit, who is the teacher, the comforter, the helper, who gives counsel, guidance, and instruction to those who will listen. Job was an honest man, God-fearing man. Apparently, he was a ruler in Edom. He was a grandson of Esau.
And by the way, I am convinced that the reason why that is not a well-known piece of history is that the Catholic Church would not have liked anything good to come out of Esau's line. Esau was the bad guy, was the bad brother, and Jacob was the good brother, and they invested a lot into Jacob. So when Job, and if you look at certain translations of the Bible, especially, for instance, the Jerusalem Bible or the Breton Septuagint, there's a lot going on after that final verse, Job 42:17, that explains exactly who Jobab was,
mm-hmm.
and who his parents were, and where he ruled, and all of this stuff, and the fact that he was the grandson of Esau, even though Esau had a change of heart. Remember in the story, Esau finally came around. It was this part of that last verse was removed in the translations that came through the translators of in the Catholic Church.
Right. And we also know that Job, as a youngster, probably had a good relationship with his grandfather, Jacob, or his uncle Jacob, his grandfather Isaac. He would have given him the knowledge of God, the God of his great grandfather Abraham, his grandfather Isaac, his father Esau, and his uncle Jacob. Job obviously was a God-fearing man. Because Satan told Elohim, the Ancient of Days, that if he would just allow him to make life miserable, that Job would curse Elohim, the Ancient of Days. And so Job went through hell. And he came back from hell. And he never cursed God. This statement Job made at the end when God revealed himself to Job. Job was asking God, why are you putting me through hell? What have I done to deserve this judgment? Let me know what I've done and then put me to death. And then Job makes this statement after God has explained to him everything, the things that Job did not know. And we really need to recognize this, especially when we think we know what God will do and how God will act and what God won't do and what God will do. In Job chapter 42, verses 1 through 6, Job makes this statement. It is profound. It is full of insight, and we would do well to pay attention to it. This was the answer Job gave to Yahweh. I know that you are all powerful. What you conceive, you can perform. That is a very telling statement because it confirms a very important fact. Do you know what that is? Whatever you can think up in your mind, you can make. Your thought becomes reality. I am the man who obscured your designs with my empty-headed words. What is he saying there? Empty-headed?
That I was stupid.
I did not know what I needed to know to make the judgments that I was making. I have been holding forth on matters I cannot understand, on marvels beyond me and my knowledge. Listen, I have more to say. Now it is my turn to ask questions and yours to inform me. I knew you then only by hearsay. But now, having seen you with my own eyes, I retract all I have said. I retract all I have said. And in dust and ashes, I repent. Turn to John chapter 6. It is safe to say that in all the cases where God has interacted with man in one respect or another, the men have had the same type or have come to the same type of realization as Job did. I didn't know you, and yet I thought I knew you. And now that I know you, I retract what I thought about you before and how I responded to you before and what I believed about you before. You ask any Christian today if they know God, and I would say the vast majority would say, yes, I do.
It is a given. Christians have to believe that they know God, because if they don't, they themselves don't consider themselves to be Christian. There's a gentleman that comes by my employment every once in a while, and he's from the sister church that we grew up in. And he is convinced, he literally is convinced that the church he goes to is the church that God put on earth to bring the truth to the world in the last days. And if you ask him a question, he just say, well, that's not true. That's not what I've been taught. You see, so what happens when our belief system, just the system itself, gets in the way of the facts?
Here's a thought. When Job, let me say this. Before Job's trial, did he know God? Well, according to his own concluding statement,
no. He didn't.
Right. Was he a righteous man?
Before or afterwards? Before. No. But God considered him a righteous man. You know, when God was talking to Satan, he said, well, have you considered my servant Job? This is a righteous man. Job was righteous the same way that the faithful my servant is righteous enough.
Job was a law abiding.
Law abider, right.
But he didn't know.
Correct.
God. I need to say this correctly. Job was like the rich young ruler. The rich young ruler was a righteous man according to the law. And what was it that the Son of God said to the rich young ruler after he said you must keep the commandments. And he said, which ones? Honor your father and your mother. Do not kill. Do not steal. Do not commit adultery. Love your neighbor as yourself. And he said, all
these I have done.
I have kept from my youth. From my youth is important. Why? Because of the age of accountability. So then the Son of God said, one thing you lack. Sell all that you have, give to the poor,
and follow me.
And come, follow me.
So what was it that the rich young ruler lacked?
Knowledge of God.
Exactly. Knowledge of God. Same thing Job lacked at the beginning of the experience.
Right. Now, Job lost everything. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
When Satan started in on him, Job lost everything. Family, friends, all of his livestock, all his possessions. He lost everything. What happened? What is the end or the rest of the story? After his trial, what did he get? I didn't read that, but it says it in Job. He received, what was it, 10 times more or 7 times more, something like that. Can look it up.
I have an interesting question. What was the reward of all the people that died? Or were they just necessarily collateral damage, like all the children that died?
Well, it says that his children were not righteous.
Okay.
Job was righteous, but his children were not.
A few minutes ago, I asked the question about the righteous situation with Job. Did we ever finish that? Was he righteous before, righteous after? I missed that.
No, I said that he was righteous as the rich young ruler was righteous.
So was that righteous? Or
the law-abiding righteousness, but you don't know God. And when you're put to the test, when you are put to the test, and I'm going to talk about that later.
By the way, it is twofold. Job 42:10, the Lord restored the fortunes of Job when he prayed for his friends, and the Lord increased all that Job had twofold.
And then it lists.
And then it lists all everything. And by the way, the idea that God would willy-nilly with no consideration for a person just kill them outright or let Satan kill them outright. The fact is that Job's sons and daughters were behaving in an evil manner.
It has to do with ownership. It
has to do, yes.
Who owns them?
Right.
Because you are a servant, and a servant has an owner, a master, which, and I just, this just reminds me, last Sabbath, we had a comment in our comment window. Dennis, what was that comment?
You know, I don't remember.
What is this? Satan is Lord.
Oh, yes.
You
yes,
don't
right.
remember that?
No, I do. I thought you were talking about...
That was the only comment we had, then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what the word Lord means?
Master.
Master. Master the Son of God talks about servant. A servant is not greater than his master. A servant serves one of two masters. The individual who left the comment in the comment window last week acknowledged their servitude and who they serve. Is a servant able to serve their master if they do not know their master's will?
Absolutely not. Excuse me, I have used the illustration of a, let's say, a platoon leader. The platoon sergeant needs to know the will and the way his platoon leader operates, so that when his platoon leader is away, or let's say his platoon leader gets wounded or something, the first sergeant can run the platoon the same way that the platoon commander could do it or would do it. This is one of the reasons why, and I use that illustration for the idea that when God appoints his faithful and wise servant by putting him over all that he owns, the faithful and wise servant will know his master to such an extent that his master doesn't have to worry about how the faithful and wise servant runs his kingdom. He will run it exactly the same way.
Well, and I'm going to talk about that, because there's another insight that comes from that. If you will turn to Matthew chapter 24, and starting with verse 42, Matthew 24, starting with verse 42, so stay awake . That statement has a very clear spiritual meaning, because obviously your physical body needs sleep. Our physical bodies need sleep. So staying awake is not referring to our physical awareness. It is our spiritual awareness. Stay awake spiritually, because you do not know the day when your master is coming. What does that mean? Stay awake. How do you stay spiritually awake? And what makes this being your master? Your master. You are under the authority of the master that you are serving. You are under the authority of the master you are serving. When the Son of God was baptized, and the next day he's walking beside the Sea of Galilee, and he calls a few men. Were these men serving him? Were they serving his father? Was his master, was their master his father?
Tell us.
Was there, okay, so was
James and John, Peter and Andrew, did they have a master?
Yes.
And who was their master?
Jesus Christ.
Absolutely not.
When they were...
A servant knows his master's will. His servant knows his master's will.
So
they have
didn't...
to know his master's will, or he's not his, their master.
So that makes sense. Yeah.
That is what I am saying.
Yeah.
Job, who was Job's...
At the beginning, it was not God.
Was it Satan?
Did Job know his master?
Not
at the beginning.
Until after the test.
Right. There we go. So the purpose of the test is to show you your either your knowledge or lack of knowledge of your master.
Here's what I am saying. A servant knows his master's will. So whomever is in control of the will is in control of the servants. What I mean by this is, at the time the days of, well, let's take a look at Job. Obviously, Job had some understanding, some knowledge of the Ancient of Days. Probably from his uncle, from his grandfather. Yet he had knowledge and he acted on this knowledge, but he did not have understanding. By his own admission, he says what he knew
about God.
About God, beheaded, empty-headedness. The disciples' knowledge of the God of Israel came from the scribes and priests, and we know how much truth they spewed.
None to speak of.
And we know how difficult it was for all 12 disciples to believe what their teacher, their master, was telling them. So now back to the faithful and wise enough. And that word enough is key here. Bondservant. So stay awake. Only you can only learn what you need to learn when you're awake. You cannot learn anything when you're asleep.
Do you remember many, many years ago? I don't know whether you did it, but people would take these tapes and they'd put them in their cassettes and then they'd put these little speakers underneath their pillows and they would put a language learning thing. And so that you went to sleep and you went to sleep. And while you were in sleep, you were being fed this information on how to speak Russian or whatever. Funny thing, that never worked. It didn't last very long, but it certainly fooled a bunch of people.
Yes, you cannot learn anything.
Subliminal learning.
While you are asleep. So stay awake. And an awake state of being in this situation means that you are spiritually awake, which allows you to learn spiritual things. The food and drink that has the spiritual quality is described as good food and bad food, good drink and bad drink. Good drink is pure living water, and bad drink is inebriating.
Oh, by the way, good fish and bad fish.
Spiritually. If you eat unclean spiritual food, you will have an unclean spirit. Unclean, corrupted knowledge. So, stay awake so that you know what you are eating and drinking spiritually. Why? Because you do not know the day your master is coming. You need to know your master's will when he arrives. Because he's already come to tell you what you need to know. When he returns, you need to know it.
You need to demonstrate it. And see, this is the thing that many Christians believe. I don't, you know, they'll say, I don't really need to know all of this stuff, because when Jesus comes and takes me to heaven, then he's going to teach me what I didn't know here on earth, and everything will be okay. Unfortunately, according to what this says, that's not the case. And by the way, that's going to be quite a surprise.
Oh, that's going to be incredible. Can you imagine the viciousness that people are going to exhibit?
So what the Son of God is saying here is that you need to know the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And the only way you can do that is by staying awake and learning the truth. Because when he comes, he's not going to come and say, okay, let me tell you what you need to know. He's coming to those who are ready to serve immediately. He's already come and said everything that he needed to say in order for us to know everything that we need to know.
Back to this older guy who came and talked with me this week. When I intimated, I tried to be gentle because he said something that just, I felt I had to respond, that we have to overcome. I said, you know, Revelation 3:21, he who overcomes as I overcame will sit down with me on my throne, as I am with my Father on his throne. And I told him, I said, this to me says that you have to overcome whatever it is that is being placed before you. You cannot rely on Jesus to overcome it for you. And his response was very antagonistic in, you know, no, Jesus died for my sins. I don't have anything I need to worry about. Doesn't matter if I sin, because he died for them. And you see, the problem with this is this person is not spiritually awake.
Okay, what was the text Revelation?
3:21.
Thank you.
Here's the thing. When is the master going to return? When he has his servants prepared.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he's going to return. And he has been ready to return for a couple hundred years or more. He has been ready to return as soon as he had a kingdom on this earth. A kingdom that would represent him. Now, his first people that he called to be his kingdom, he took out of Egypt, brought them into the wilderness, where he was going to teach them the truth. Teach them what they needed to know so they could be his kingdom. He gave them the law, the covenant, and in the law, he gave them the information that they needed to know to be his people. But we know that all they were willing to do was to continue to practice the pagan rituals they had learned in Egypt. And the same is true today. For the kingdom that came out of the world, continue to practice the rituals of the religions they came out of. They do keep the Sabbath, as did the Israelites, for the most part. But they did not know their God. And as I talked about last week, when God brought them to the border of the promised land in Kadesh Barnea after 2 years, since they left Egypt. Some think, why 2 years? Why didn't he bring them out, give them the Ten Commandments and the law and the sanctuary, and then take them into the promised land? Take them in to the promised land. Well, he needed them to know them. They needed to know the Elohim, the true gods, the gods of their fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They needed to know them, not to know they existed. They certainly knew that. They saw the cloud. They heard the voice. In fact, it scared them. They told Moses to tell God to quit speaking, because if he kept speaking, they would all be dead. They would all be dead. And God told Moses, yes, indeed, they're very truthful about that. And they did not hear God speaking. They did not know the God of their fathers, and they really didn't want to know.
Yeah, they didn't know, nor did they care.
So God had them gather intelligence of the land they were about to enter. Why? Because he knew what was going to happen. He knew the report that would be given to the people, and he knew the people would refuse to enter. And they did. And those that then decided that they were going to enter anyway, after God had said, you will never enter this land, you will die in the wilderness, they thought, okay, God, we'll show you. We'll enter. You put it that way, we'll go in. We'll go in, and he says, you do that, and you're all dead. And that's exactly what happened.
Do we see any parallels between what occurred to ancient Israel and what is going to occur to those who today believe they're in the kingdom of heaven?
I think I vividly see it. It's all around us.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what I'm saying. You may think you know everything there is to know about your God. You may think you know everything you need to know about your God. And yet at the end, you will be like Job, admitting that you did not know anything. That you knew your God existed. But that's about it. So stay awake, because you do not know the day your master is coming. You may be quite sure of this, that if the householder had known at what time of night the burglar would come, he would have stayed awake and would not have allowed anyone to break through the wall of his house.
For our new listeners, who's the householder?
We are coming to that.
Okay.
Therefore, you too must stand ready, because the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect.
Okay, so, Rick, what we have been taught as Christians to expect is that when Jesus comes, he's coming in the clouds as lightning flashing from east to west, and that every eye shall see him, and then every knee will bow, whether they want to or not. Every knee will bow, and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. And that is when people expect him to come.
See, the young people really learned that, because I understand there was a local Bible teacher that literally had his children stand up and look out the east window and say, one day you're going to look out this window and you're going to see.
Yep.
Right out this window.
So here it is, Don. What sort of servant then is faithful and wise enough for the master to place him over his household to give them their food at the proper time?
So the key is in over his household. So that's the householder.
That is the householder, the head of the house. This is the individual who is awake.
This, and by the way, this is not the owner of the house.
No.
Hmm.
Now, here is the thing. When the Son of God was going back to his father, he had some parting words to say to his disciples, his students. And he said, this good news, this gospel, this teaching of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout all the world and as a testimony, a witness, and then the end will come.
Okay, if you could say something about this. All three of us have friends all around us that will say, absolutely, that's exactly what we're doing. Didn't you give offering last week for new satellites, new churches, because we are going to the world, and Jesus will not come until every last person in the world has heard about him. So that's exactly what we're doing.
And so if we want to really proclaim this message, what we have to do is print up millions of sheets of paper
exactly.
And fly over Borneo and dump them
exactly.
out.
Exactly, and more satellites and more stations.
Right.
So how do we respond to that?
Well, the end. What is the end? What is the end he is talking about? Does it mean that when the gospel of the kingdom has fallen on all the ears of all the people who will ever give it admittance to them, and then the curtain drops and salvation is no longer for anyone? Is that when the gospel of the kingdom has been preached in all the world?
I think not.
Let me read to you.
That's good. That's good.
This is a study for the guy at Ace Hardware. He
wants
to hear this also.
Let me read to you a parable.
Text, please.
Parable of a wedding feast. Matthew chapter 22. This was after he announced to the leadership of Israel, the spiritual leadership of Israel, that he was taking the kingdom away from them and was going to give it to a people who would produce the fruit thereof. And then he tells this parable of the wedding feast. Jesus began to speak to them in parables once again. The kingdom of the heavens may be compared to a king who gave a feast for his son's wedding. He sent his servants to call those who had been invited, but they would not come. Next, he sent more servants. Tell those who have been invited, he said, that I have my banquet all prepared. My oxen and fatted cattle have been slaughtered and everything is ready. Come to the wedding. They were not interested. One went off to his farm, another to his business, and the rest seized his servants, maltreated them, and killed them. The king was furious. He said to his servants, the wedding is ready, but as those who were invited proved to be unworthy, go to the crossroads in the town and invite everyone you can find to the wedding. So these servants went out onto the roads and collected together everyone they could find, bad and good alike. And the wedding hall was filled with guests. Here's the point. Who was invited to the wedding? The whole world.
Right. Everybody.
The whole world, good and bad. The whole world. What does the gospel of the kingdom go to?
The whole world.
The whole world. What does the gospel of the kingdom do?
It separates.
It brings people to the marriage feast. Now,
but
the marriage feast is what? The kingdom.
The kingdom.
The
right.
gospel of the kingdom brings the kingdom to fruition. So when the gospel of the kingdom is preached, what its purpose is for is to build the kingdom, not to save the world.
Exactly. And the issue with that is people always have a choice. They can hear this gospel and take it to the kingdom, that is, a member of the kingdom, or they can refuse it. Everybody will do that. So how many people out of everybody will do that?
Hey, here's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Just so you can get it before we run out of time. We'll cover this tomorrow
also.
This
is awesome.
The gospel of the kingdom is to educate the people with the truth so they can enter the kingdom. When the door is shut, no more people can enter the kingdom, but that is not the final judgment.
Oh.
That is just those who have been willing to enter the kingdom. And we also see in that parable that just in case you had some doubts that you could be in the kingdom without knowing the truth because of your association, because you responded to the invitation, but you didn't learn what you needed to know to be a member of the kingdom of Elohim, that you will not stay very long in that kingdom. You will be expelled. So there is a specific requirement to be in the kingdom, and faith is not one of those requirements.
Is that the truth?
So tomorrow we are going to speak more about the gospel of the kingdom and that what its purpose is.
Wow, that was great, Rick. Thank you. And I encourage our listeners to make use of the podcast that we have on Blog Talk Radio. You can download any of those, including this one this afternoon when it's finally processed. We also encourage you to join us tomorrow for another edition of The Revelation of Jesus, where we'll continue this discussion. So on behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis saying so long for now. We'll see you all tomorrow and have a great day.